on. Yes. And I think we have pretty decent levels. Let's see. Yeah, I think that's all right. How are we sound?
Is it all right?
We okay? We're good?
Are we there?
All right. We're in.
Great.
All right, so you're not going to do the show this week, Katrina? That was Katrina silent, shaking her head.
No way.
No. That's all right. I did my show and I sounded nasally. I know. You need to rest. You're a doctor. You need your rest.
Yeah, well, that's, you know.
Oh, is that what it is? All right. So this is, what, the 19th of February?
Indeed it is.
And it's what's left on Is Good Radio. And I, yes, have recorded. Hit record. Katrina just reminded me to hit record. We are recording. And
that's an important thing to do.
Yeah, especially since we're trying to podcast on Podomatic. Throw that little...
You know, it would be hard to podcast without recording.
Without recording. So, I
imagine that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, I'm Greg, and you are?
I'm Steve.
Steve, and we're here to talk about some politics. How are you, by the way?
I'm good. Right. I'm doing well. How about you?
Mm. I'm fearing that my job is going to be taken from me tomorrow.
Oh, good God.
But other than that, I feel great.
You know, you and everybody else in the country, it's really freaking terrifying.
Yeah, they did a couple of things that all of a sudden put the fear, like, yeah. I was like, oh, I'll get through this somehow, this recession, this depression, and then a couple of moves by management this week, and I was like, wow, even me, maybe
wow.
I could go.
Nice.
Yeah, so.
Ay, ay, ay.
We started doing layoff jokes, as bad as it is to sort of almost will that problem on you. We've been doing layoff jokes in the office.
Don't.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm superstitious. I think sometimes, you know, you got to be careful.
Yeah,
you're not going to lose your job, or if you do, you're going to find a better one.
That's what I hope. I mean, I'm hoping that it's all
there. Still
part
money out
of
there.
Something. Yeah, yeah, that's true. It's just, it's so profound. I had a drink with a friend in the business last night. And what I do, in case people are listening that don't know what I do, I work in film retransferring, remastering, restoration. I actually schedule all that work for a couple of studios, and the business has dropped tremendously since I was called in to kind of help sort that out for the company I work for now.
Right.
And so, you know, a friend...
And this is affected by the fact there's been zero film production since
early last year.
Zero
film production, less independent film production, yeah. Less studios.
Well, the studio, yeah.
And then, like, Blu-ray, there was a great article, it was horrifying, about how Blu-ray is not taking the place of the drop in DVD sales.
Right.
And all that leads to less and less remastering, you know, and... You know, I looked at it. Yeah, I'm a 10-year veteran of the business, and I looked at it with my friend, and I was like, maybe it's time. Maybe there will not be what we're doing.
It's hard to say. I mean, I think that the wise thing is probably to put out your feelers at least and start looking
for
something else.
Yeah, I have started.
Got to.
Yeah.
Got to.
There are rumored to be some studios are going to do some contract deals, and I could get involved with that.
Right.
I wanted to stay where I'm at now. It's a great place, but... Like I said, they sent a couple of signals out to my group of people, and I went,
yeah.
Oh, God, no, not...
Pay attention, pay close
exactly.
attention. This is not coming from nowhere.
Exactly. So, but anyway, how about you? Doing all right?
I'm doing all right. I still have a job, thank God, you know, and I'm grateful for it. But, you know,
as you should be.
Everybody's affected by the same thing.
Yeah.
We're here in Hollywood, and with no film production, it's a struggle, but, you know, things will turn around. And I'm not going to bemoan the fact that I think part of it's being caused by people who think that they're helping themselves, i.e. the Screen Actors Guild. No offense, but,
right.
You know, the behavior at a time like this to continue to pursue theoretical work at a time when real work is at a standstill.
Yeah.
And these are the same people who are complaining about no work, not realizing that doing this is also affecting their real jobs, which are, you know, by and large in the service industry.
Yeah.
This is a kind of a crazy thing.
Now, if the Actors Guild, if Screen Actors Guild goes on strike, I know I'll be out of work.
Yeah.
I'll either be one of the two people they keep that works around the clock, or I'll be...
Either way, it's going to be hellacious.
It's going to be pretty
bad. Make up for the fact that really 10 people should be doing this work.
Right.
But you're lucky to have the job.
Exactly.
So don't say anything because a complainer is...
Exactly.
Yeah, no, it's a strange time. I don't think they'll strike. But then again, I mean, I don't know. This the whole behavior right now is so amazing to me. I really don't I don't understand. They are back at the table again, so
right.
That's good.
Yeah, they are. And honestly, if you look at like the granddaddy unions are, you know, the Teamsters and the UAW.
Right.
And the UAW is getting its ass kicked in just trying to keep General Motors and Chrysler alive.
Right.
They are taking concessions that no one's really ever heard of before for them. So if the Screen Actors Guild can read the tea leaves from that.
Need to be realistic.
Yes, yes.
When it comes down to dollars and cents, theory is wonderful, but real money is better.
I agree. I also just think, I mean, there is a, because of a 15% drop in DVD sales, Fox had a net loss of 70% operating revenue.
Which is, staggering.
Yes.
You know, it's staggering.
That shows how important the home entertainment thing
was.
But
we've been hearing, for a long time that stuff was on its way out, and it doesn't seem like anything sort of stepped into the void.
No.
You know, people are renting. Netflix is the one business that's actually still doing very, very well.
Right.
Because you get them, you look at them, you send them back, and it's done. And you don't have to go
no
to bloody Blockbuster, and there's no late fees.
Yeah. No, and we were talking about that today, that they've already started moving into downloads. Netflix has. And
yeah. Exactly.
But whatever. All right, so enough about that.
Well, I mean, but this, you know, which
it all ties
the auto
into
industry,
the
it will tie into Obama's visit, his first state visit.
To Canada. Very North American of him.
Very North American, very wise, very good, very interesting. I thought he made some interesting points. The Canadians, in their wonderful Canadian way, made their points, too.
Right.
You know, letting him know that they were not interested in any further engagement in Afghanistan.
Right.
In fact, had an exit date that was very specific.
Right.
And were wondering if we had the same.
I know.
And that was very interesting. I mean, I was like, wow, they made some strong points in a very soft Canadian way. They talked about the protectionist clause in the stimulus bill, which is being driven by the Democrats, which is Buy American, which also should give them pause, since 75% of their exports get consumed by the United States.
Right.
That's a big chunk of cash.
There has to be a certain point where we have to turn to countries. We both have done this. We both call it countries companies.
Well, you know,
but
they
that's
are.
Pretty much what they are. Yeah. where they can't feed off of the United States, it's not sustainable for us to keep paying out and spending money. I kind of believe in that.
You're making a good point. It's that they're trying to keep us in a mode of spending that we can't sustain ourselves.
Exactly.
Anymore. And that's our whole problem. Living, we've all lived beyond our means. We've been treated to monumental levels of credit that didn't exist a quarter of a century ago, and now the bubble has burst because at some point all that has to be paid. This deleveraging that we're going through right now is actually probably going to be good for us in the long run.
Right.
But we can't be expected to continue to buy everything. You're right, and people aren't going to do it.
No.
Or they may be buying Canadian products, but not in the same levels that they have before.
Unless we have a commensurate level of commerce there.
Yeah.
And not just missiles and planes. I mean, you know, something that we actually make in Kentucky or something like
that. Exactly.
You know, it's a one-way flow of dollars out of our community and into theirs, and it's not going to work. So,
I mean, there's a point to buying American, and I think we need to focus on that. But there's also the practicality of buying whatever is least expensive
and has
the highest quality too.
Exactly. And honestly, quality is starting to fall by the wayside a little bit. You know.
Yeah. I think
the $6.99 polo shirt. Doesn't have to last more than a season or so.
And it doesn't, you know. But again, I think we've gotten into a sort of garbage mentality. I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, since the 90s, there's cheap plastic furniture, there's cheap clothes, but the stuff is essentially garbage.
Yeah.
It lasts a very, very short time and it has to be replaced. Ultimately, it doesn't make any sense.
I do have
you
some
spend
Malaysian.
More money.
It's true. You do a long term. You do. I do have some Malaysian made T-shirts from the 90s that are still rocking.
Well, that's cool. Which you probably wash them in cold water.
Yeah, I do.
There you go.
I do. I treat them as if they're linens.
That's what you got to do. Trash and a treasure, baby.
Well, getting back to Obama again, his style of leadership is striking.
Yes.
I love what he does, and I'm always dubious about his policy. It's 2 weeks running now where I love the whole, you know, no frills trip to Canada.
Yeah. It was great. 6 hours in and out.
Yeah.
No fanfare. Mm-hmm. Very much in keeping with the mood and the tone of the times we're in. It makes sense.
Yeah, and it's...
And it was efficient and effective.
Efficient and about business.
Berserk for him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's very smart, and it doesn't step over Hillary's Asian tour.
Right.
You know, Pacific
Rim
tour.
Which we need to talk about in a moment, too.
Yeah, well...
Korea's fascinating.
She, you know, for Hillary Clinton, she's not sucking the oxygen out of the room like I thought she was. She's not getting as much press as I thought she would going over... And I think it's very, very striking. There's a message that I'm waiting to get. Like, I'm waiting for the documentary that will happen after this presidency that explains why they went to Asia first. She didn't go to a trouble spot.
She didn't go to a trouble spot. Although, you know, North Korea... You know,
North Korea's a bit, yeah. And she talked...
I might quibble that is a trouble spot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Come on.
But I mean, I guess the bright minds are saying, you know, all roads run through Asia.
Right. And it's true.
Yeah, you know, she's farmed out... Israeli, Palestinian, Middle East.
Right.
And she has a special envoy for Pakistan, Afghanistan.
Yeah.
So there's some data they have that says, no, you really have to sign a deal with the Asian countries.
Right, right, right.
For whatever reason. It's just, that's the part that I found very interesting. But then, and the other part is that she makes barely a dent in his coverage.
Yeah,
I expected her to.
No, it's true, but I mean, he's the rock star right now. I mean, the Canadians. I mean, I couldn't believe the kind of reception that he got there.
Yeah,
and the level of fervor of the crowd. It's mm-hmm. like it's kind of extraordinary for an American president.
Yeah,
it's pretty tremendous.
I was really excited that he did not do a victory lap or I'm in trouble, so I'm going to get out of town.
Right.
Which is usually all presidents get in trouble, go overseas.
Right. To burnish.
Yeah. It worked for Bill Clinton. It didn't really work for George Bush.
Bill Clinton either did that or he was in some bloody church somewhere.
Yeah. But I mean, I think when Monica Lewinsky really went into high gear, he did like a tour of Europe to show everybody that they still love him.
Right.
Someone still loves him.
Well, that was Bill's MO. You know, let's hit the campaign trail again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's when he was his best.
But it was neither of those two. He just went out.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Yeah. Speaking of Bill, did you hear him this week talking about, don't blame me for this. You know, listen, he had a point. He said, if my staff was there and remember that I left you with a surplus, mm-hmm. are you kidding? You can't leave this at my doorstep.
I never expected in my life that the American, like, pop culture television would turn and say, hey, you know what? This actually started with Clinton.
Right.
You know, the deregulation that got us here.
And it did.
I never expected that. I knew that.
Right.
And I knew that I forgave him that, for the most part, until now.
But again, I mean, you know, when we speak about deregulation, you know, one has to remember that that's one thing, and the sort of immorality that we're seeing now and the lack of ethics, it goes beyond ethics. This is just pure evil, really.
Right.
You know, Madoff is an evil person. I mean, what he's done to ordinary people is incredible.
It's like a disease. Madoff, like the part...
Madoff, and now the Stanford idiocy.
Which one?
You know, the Stanford scandal in Texas. It's a similar...
Oh, it's another Ponzi scheme or something?
Another kind of... financial
fraud.
Meltdown where the billionaire is missing. His is only $8 billion.
You know, only
a drop in the bucket compared to Madoff.
How powerful was Bernie Madoff when, like, one part of the mortgage thing that was announced this week was $75 billion, right? And then there's like another $2 trillion or something like that, or $200 billion for, you know, other things in that particular program, but. One single investment guy organization had $50 billion.
It's incredible.
That's just insane.
But I think it must magnetize. Like, once a person actually has the reputation and is known to possess this kind of money and seemingly is giving you these extraordinary
Turn.
Results, of course you're going to go there. That's what happened. Yeah. And the delusion, I mean, some people did get paid out very handsomely.
Yeah.
That's the interesting thing about it. You know, that was his best advertisement. Well, I got these returns from Madoff. I mean, you should go there. So some got ripped off, some didn't. And some actually in these settlements have gotten, in some cases, they're saying a few people got money that they actually have given back because they're saying, no, I actually profited here.
Right.
So
and the profit's not worth
this.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder about that.
I hope they all do.
I mean, that's where all the money went in the housing market is to speculators that got out in time.
Right. Right.
I mean, it's just... money that's vanished.
Yeah, it's a strange, strange thing. I was also fascinated by the fact that UBS is returning, I think, in the neighborhood of $780 million, which, again, these numbers are so staggering, but they sound so small now.
Yeah.
I'm like, only $780 million, not a billion, something, you know, only $1 billion, just under.
That's it. That's nothing.
But what was most fascinating is that they're also giving their opening records in Switzerland.
Yeah.
And this is a precedent that is frightening people. And the government has basically said, the United States government has said, if you're an American citizen and you're hiding money in Switzerland, we will find out about it, so you better get your accounts together now.
Right.
And get ready to pay the taxes that we are owed.
Right.
Because we're going to get them. It's pretty interesting.
I mean, part of me that was going to eventually be a billionaire is really depressed about that.
I know, but, and they turned the roof off of Switzerland. Where are we going to go now?
I know, but considering I'll never do that, I should be okay with it.
Well, you can still have offshore accounts in the Caymans.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's
although
okay.
I think that they know, the government has to know about what goes through there because they probably have their own little secret accounts there.
Everybody's got accounts in the Cayman. Except me.
I'm working my way up to it, yeah.
Except me. I should open one just with, you know, $100 or something and see what happens.
Just to see what happens.
Just to say I have one.
Right.
My offshore account in the Caymans.
You'll wind up with a $10,000 tax liability
exactly.
Just because of it. Like,
yeah.
Just being there.
Or just put myself under suspicion of the IRS just because.
Right. Well, speaking of the outrage of the week to me was, not outrage, but like Bill Clinton's stepping on his wife's line.
He seems to have a problem with that. Have you noticed since the campaign on
throwing himself back
Mama
in the spotlight?
Can't get too much spotlight because it makes Papa unhappy.
Yeah, and I was very surprised. He did like two morning shows, like CNN and NBC or CBS. I mean, I was very surprised to see him out there again, and he had that quote which topped the headlines on Yahoo News at least.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's a big deal though.
Well, and I can, the one thing I got from seeing him speak downtown when he did the speaker series for a few years, when we had a speaker series at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, was that he is a little full of himself.
Yeah.
He is.
And now without anything to do, really.
Hey, the Clinton Global Initiative is one of the best things he's ever done.
No, it's great, but I'm saying he doesn't have... there's nothing that's taxing his energy in the way that a presidency would.
Oh, sure.
And now, you know, Mrs. Clinton is traveling the world in a capacity that is meaningful.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not poo-pooing his initiative, don't get me wrong.
No, I mean, when he left office, he said there's one great ex-president, and that's Jimmy Carter.
Right.
And, you know, and Jimmy Carter, to that point, was one of the most serious... It was much more successful, much more impact after his presidency
afterwards,
than during
yes.
his 4 years. And he believed that that's what he wanted to do, Bill Clinton did. And the Clinton Global Initiative took a while to get going, but it is... There are things he's done on AIDS and vaccinations that's pretty amazing. The upside of his dirtiness is that he gets his corporate buddies to hook up the vaccinations or take the write off on
some
sort of thing.
Everybody's got their ways. I actually don't mind all that about him. I think that really we should be a little more realistic. I kind of like a guy with a libido and an ego.
Oh, I don't
goes
mind.
For it.
I don't mind the libido and the ego. I think that he has been politically tone deaf for a large part of
his
post presidency.
Yes, he has. Incredibly.
And that I didn't expect from the greatest politician we'd seen in, you know, 20 years.
And this and the very palpable jealousy of his wife.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So bizarre.
Because he almost, in a way, almost torpedoed her campaign, which was amazing.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
He was
yeah.
the worst thing about her campaign.
Because he introduced a number of elements that did not work for her.
He...
Racializing things.
He tried, yeah.
Which was so ugly. And then, of course, the McCain-Palin camp picked up on that drumbeat and it killed them, too.
Right.
Justifiably so. They deserved it.
Hillary's big mistake was listening to her pollster, who had done a marvelous job for the Clintons over the years.
Right.
But the ready on day one thing was a turkey straight out of the gate.
Yeah.
And... she ran the campaign that Kerry should have run in 2004
right.
against the guy who was the new, like, you, there, that was not what this election was going to
right,
be about.
Right, right, right.
She also ran, I think, because they figured Giuliani was somehow going to get it.
Well, Giuliani was a mess, though.
Yeah.
And all of those sort of, you know, problems with the, I can't remember the name of the drug company they were supporting. He had a lot of problems. He never would have made it. The divorce itself was problematic, and the fact that there was adultery, I mean, he would not have made it through that kind of gauntlet, and he knew it.
But he was leading
for nine months before. Yeah, but can you imagine if that man was our president right now?
There would be no homeless squeegee guys on any exit ramp in
because
the
they would all
States.
Be imprisoned. They would be. Off the streets and warmly tucked into their jail cells.
Did you live in New York City ever?
I've lived on there on and off, yeah.
Because I wasn't there for the squeegee episode, but I got the reports from home when Giuliani started to really sanitize New York City.
Oh, it's crazy.
And it was abhorrent to everybody in the city.
But, you know, at the same time, those squeegee guys were obnoxious.
They were.
But, you know, it was New York. It was raw. It was
New York
part
was
of the
dirty,
scene.
You know?
It was dirty. I find it a bit boring now.
Well, it's going to go, from what I understand, New York is in, New York City's in as many financial woes as California State is, and it's going to head back towards that
rotten vibrancy that we loved.
Yeah, Rolling Stones late 70s.
When it was, the Some Girls album.
Yes, it's going to go back to that.
Rats on the West Side and bed bugs uptown.
Exactly.
What a mess.
That's exactly where it's headed again, which it needs a little jolt of that.
Why not? I mean, come on. That was one of the best art and music came out of that city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then L.A. took over.
Yeah. It's true. Nobody would like to hear that, but it's true.
I know.
We're so big and still kind of rotten, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're rotten and sprawled out.
And
you know?
We're rotten and sprawled out, but man, we've got our rottenness. We've got a lot of armpits and other things going on here.
So what else you have in that notebook of yours?
Oh, my notebook. Nothing much. We're just, you know, amused by so many things today. Burris.
You know, I have a little list here. He's on my list. Roland Burris.
Burris. He looked like a saint.
I was.
And now he's like everybody else.
He, just because
and
I wrote this down.
It's a shame because I think if he'd just been clearer in the beginning, but he wasn't,
no,
he'd be okay.
His biggest success, besides being a very successful African-American in the early 60s prior... He graduated like Yale or Harvard Law School before the Voting Rights Act of 1964.
Right.
And his biggest success was to become the first African-American elected to statewide office in Illinois. And then he just seems to have squandered that over the years. Because I did a little research on him. I was hoping, I was like, look, you know what? It was a Blagojevich... Like audacious,
I love Blagojevich, though.
You know,
he makes me laugh. It's on some level, there's a lot of hypocrisy here. He's just doing blatantly what everybody else does in the political game.
For fuck's sake.
And it really kind of drives me crazy that everybody's being so goddamn sanctimonious about it. Mm-hmm. Come on, do we not all trade favors, especially in this arena?
Hey,
it's just done in a subtle way so that it's not really traceable, but come on. We all know what it means when I say, you need to do this for me, then I know that I'm going to have to come back and do something for you.
Governor Patterson of New York frittered away Carolyn Kennedy's candidacy to replace Hillary Clinton, which I think would have been one of the best things for the Democratic Party.
Right.
Because he was trying to figure out what was the best bet.
Right.
What was the best bet for him?
Right.
And what was the best bet to win that seat again? It was pure politics. And the only thing Blagojevich did was say, you have to contribute to my campaign funds. Which
Caroline
is
did not help
illegal.
Herself. She did not help herself, though.
She didn't.
She did not. And she made a lot of blunders that really kind of destroyed her credibility.
Yes.
And I think that he kind of...
They needed to move that through really quickly.
Yeah.
When it was her and Cuomo, like the two... dynasties,
right.
You know, and the Kennedys have a history of carpetbagging in New York.
Yeah.
You know, she could have been Bobby, but they needed to make that move quickly because in the beginning when it was her and Cuomo and the public basically favored Cuomo's son, Andrew Cuomo, but would just figure, this is what I love about New York polling, they favor one thing, but they figure, you know, that person's going to win.
That's who's going to win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were like, Carolyn's going to get it.
Always the injection of a little bit of cynicism.
Yeah, just total cynicism. Yeah. Like, well, she's going to get it, you know. Same with Hillary. Like, when she
but
first
this is the thing,
town,
people have to be careful. This is a very interesting time right now. All these sort of, you know, inevitabilities are not happening.
It's true.
A lot of things that we think are inevitable are not happening. I mean, because really, honestly, in a way, I mean, I bit the apple. I thought Hillary was unbeatable for a while.
Sure.
And I think we all did. And it was like, why do these guys just give up?
Right.
But as it went on, you know.
The one thing, you know, you're getting my Irish up on Hillary, because I was a big Hillary supporter. And every like last chapter of my thoughts on politics now is, how would have this played out if Hillary were president? And I have to say that Barack Obama, for better or for worse on policy, is the guy to carry the politics of the day. Because Hillary would have just mobilized opposition.
Yeah.
And it would have seemed almost justified in the eyes of the non-committed. that people just hated Hillary.
Right.
And fought Hillary tooth and nail. Whereas Obama, if you look at his poll numbers on likability and bipartisanship are in the 60s.
Right.
His policy numbers come down to the mid-50s, and right. one of them's at, like, low 50s. And I think where you would have seen the pure Clinton thing, which is, you know, Bill Clinton's policies were much more popular than him than hit his lowest point. Well, no, that's not true. At his lowest point, he lost the 40-year majorities. But right. in his second term, when people were like, yeah, I think he's slimy for having fucked around on his wife, his policies were polling at 66%. And I think you would have seen that with Hillary. But, like, the Republicans right now are playing such a horrible game. And they're playing to win. They've got some data that thinks they think they're going to win on.
I don't think this Newt Gingrich strategy is going to work for them, though.
I don't know.
I mean, it's... Well, let's put it this way. They're taking a gamble. If the man is successful, they're going to look like idiots.
Right.
And this is the difficulty. I mean, you've already got these Republican governors now saying, well, I won't take the stimulus money.
Yeah.
As if it's tainted
That's
in some
exactly
way.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
And I'm
about.
Saying, you know, Bobby Jindal of Louisiana, I'm like, dude, have you looked around your broke-ass state? Are you crazy? I'm sorry.
I like Tim Pawlenty, who is one of the front runners. I don't like him, but I liked his answer on this. He's one of the front runners for the nomination for the Republicans in 2012. And he actually was on the Rachel Maddow show, and she said he was the first Republican to show up on her show. And she's asked a bunch of people. And when the interview was done, she said, see, Republicans, I can be okay. But Republicans hate MSNBC like we hate Fox. Right. Like I hate Fox. And she asked him straight up, you campaigned against this stimulus bill. You call it a waste. Are you going to refuse the money? And he said, well, we pay in a dollar and get 70 cents back. So, yeah, I'm going to take the money. I'm going to try and get a dollar for a dollar finally from my state. I'd be foolish not to. Where I think this goes wrong, and he lists a whole bunch of Republican priorities. I thought that was a pretty good answer. That was right. a really good answer. Jindal and all these other guys.
I mean, come on, guys. But, you know, it's funny. In Alabama, they're already figuring the money into their budget, so
yeah,
a lot of people are being very practical.
That one guy's budget proposal included it.
Hey, why not?
What would it be like if Hillary Clinton were president?
Good and Lord.
First of all, this is such a terrible question to ask. I don't think Hillary Clinton would let the House Democrats set the framework for the fucking. I just don't think that she would have done that.
But that was a huge blunder. Very naive, very young politically, not savvy at all, and it set the tone for this whole problem from that point forward. Somebody's got to rein Ms. Pelosi in very quickly.
You're talking about Rahm Emanuel, Iron Fist.
Right.
You're talking about. All the guys that were undersecretary treasury guys under Clinton, these guys know what's going on. And my guess is that they're playing an odd. They're playing an odd that no matter what, a recession bottoms out 18 months or maybe if it's really bad, 2 months in. And by the time we start headed towards the midterm elections, we'll have something to crow about.
Right.
Well, spend anything.
And there was also a certain amount of arrogance there because they felt that they had written a bill that took into consideration many Republican positions.
Right.
And so they didn't understand what the hoopla was about. People need to actually participate in order to feel like they're included. You can crib my notes, but I'm not really there.
Right.
And that's the problem.
I think that Obama's facetious comment was probably the most telling, and what you just said now made me think of it. During his press conference, he said, maybe I should have started zero tax cuts, knowing that I wanted them, let the Republicans take credit for suggesting them, and then we'd have the tax cuts that I wanted to propose from the start.
That's probably accurate.
My first reaction was, where are you going to go on tax? When he first announced his tax cuts, I was like, where are you going to go?
Right.
That's the compromise. That's when I would be like, God damn, Bill Clinton, you gave away 30 or 40% in tax cuts. They're not even going to do a damn thing. You're just appeasing these people. And he started off at that point.
Right.
But to take it out of the...
But then again, like I said, for me, I think that there's another thing happening here, too, which is that they've also put themselves in a position where if he is successful, and we pray that he is, they're going to look really foolish. They're also giving him the moral authority to hammer them by rejecting his sort of bipartisan overtures. They've done it. He's done everything in his power to do it, and he can say it. I've tried my best, and now I have to punish you.
Well, I think there's another historic card, and I think it goes back to them trying to be the later day Newt Gingrich.
Right.
They didn't pay a price at all during the Clinton years for opposing Bill Clinton's economic policy, which. Unlike Barack Obama's economic policy thus far, as soon as his bills were passed, the market reacted. Right. Stock market went up.
Right.
They started to trend interest rates down. Talking heads on TV said, yeah, some of this is a wasteful spending, but by and large, you should see the deficit narrow, which should lead to more credit for business and lower interest rates, and it should lead to...
You're making me smile. What a great time that
right?
was.
Right? It was ridiculous. I mean, it was a much less... outside of the savings and loan debacle, it was a much less complicated issue to deal with back then. But like, let's just take it out. Let's just say that whatever Hillary put up, whatever any Democratic winner of the 2008 election put up was going to get this game plan from the Republicans. How bad would it be if it were the polarizing figure of Hillary Clinton?
Well, that's the problem. I think that's the problem. I mean, ultimately, she would not have been the effective person that we need right now. I think that the Clintons...
With the right idea. With the fucking right
idea. With the right
idea.
I mean, the woman is brilliant, but she and her husband would bring all those fleas back with them. They'd bring all those fleas back to Washington. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that is a liability that is too large for us right now.
I agree. And that's where I think that Obama was, for the politics of the next 18 months, the right guy.
Yeah.
Policy-wise, I've been starting to watch Charlie Rose again. I've had to break from MSNBC to watch like some actual analysis, some brainiac genius guys talking about the policies of the day. And, the proposal yesterday was basically applauded by left and right wing. The main thing the right wing economists say is when are we the hole is so large that the economy has to grow so much larger to make it look small.
Right.
There's no the things that we're committing to, because there's still the big challenge of this president, and really the person who wins in 2012, was going to be the government runs headlong into the built-in problems of the New Deal and the Great Society.
Right.
That was the decade of we're at a, no matter what you're doing, you could be operating at 4% growth a year. You run into the outlays are way greater than the incoming money. It's just that's just done. And Charlie Rose asked the economists that, and they're like, well, you got to have an economy to begin with. You got to do these outrageous things just to keep the economy. You're talking about a $14 to $17 trillion economy. It's a worldwide problem. You have to spend some big bucks. But... yeah, you're doing that just to come out and walk straight into like the boomers going on the dole, which is just unheard of. Like we weren't prepared for it to begin with.
No.
Although the silver lining of this is if Obama is in a relatively strong position in 2012 and he doesn't suffer losses of majorities in the House and Senate, at least the House, where tax legislation usually emanates, he can prep the nation for, like, the raise of the retirement age.
I think it needs to happen. First of all, people are living longer. They're healthier. If I hear 40 is a new 30 again, when we're talking, jump out of a window. But, I mean, it's true. I mean, people are working into their 80s now, and they're healthy and they enjoy it, I assume.
They are if they're taking Olestra.
That's right.
That may be what comes down. I mean, that was the one sobering
it's
part.
It's a solution.
Yeah.
It's a solution for Social Security. I mean, to look at 70 instead of 65, because let's face it, when this thing was created, people didn't live much longer than that. They only expected them to be on it for a couple of years, not 30 years.
Right.
You know, and that's what happens sometimes.
And the beauty of it is that the boomers are such a large generation that an incremental shift, which they'll bemoan as like the end of the world, but like a couple of year change in the retirement age, or it probably will happen to our generation, or a percentage, they do like a half a percent or a quarter percent reduction in the rate of growth, and it gets exponential over a few years.
Right.
If it's applied to the boomers, they're so large a group of people that those incremental moves change the game.
Right.
They bring it right into parity, like, very quickly. The problem is that people are like, I'm already eating, you know, cat food.
Yeah.
You know, are you really going to take the extra $10 away a month?
Well, that's the problem. I mean, we have to consider that not everybody... People who really need the money aren't the same as people who just have it because they're there at that age.
My big problem for the boomers, and it's the same problem I'm having right now trying to figure out how I would get a house. Now I'm worried about keeping my job. The market just dropped down to 7,500. Like I said, I'm tied to 10,000, so I'm now 25% down. Like, forget about being up. I'm 25% down. But the boomers did that last minute, put it in the market to make their nest egg.
Right.
If if they didn't get to safe ground...
Well, it's their generation that's kind of the architect of all this madness in general.
It's true.
I shouldn't say that, but I am...
Fuck that, man. Yeah. It's the boomers,
okay.
man.
It is their fault.
The boomers were the...
They best. Who rejected their parents and criticized the parents' values, who actually were probably a lot smarter than they were,
mm-hmm.
and a lot more conservative, who paid cash for things that they bought, except for houses.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very spoiled generation.
Yeah.
And I hate to say it, if any of you boomers are out there listening, get yourself together.
Well, I think the boomers have to look at themselves and see that. I mean, but you know what, honestly, though, they wound up, the thing about the boomers that I hate the most is that they're like, you know, I hope I die before I get old, and no trust someone over 30.
Right, and here they are.
But then when they raised their kids, they made their kids eat granola, right? These are
right.
people who, like, you know, did acid, smoked pot, did shrooms, ate, like, Cocoa Puffs in, like, a park, and, you know, like in upstate New York.
Right.
And then, like, their kids had to have, like, go to soccer and all that stuff. And I was like, come on now.
Well, the kids were supposed to try to be little genius extensions of them. And that's what they're trying to do. Of course, those kids are going to rebel and take drugs, too. And we have no idea what those
right.
little Frankensteins are going to be like. But, you know.
All right. So I have something on my little piece of paper for this week. I did have Roland Burris, which was awesome. I don't know if you heard about this, but there is a 104 guys in the house, and it's 50 something to 40 something, like 102, something like that, 60 to 40 something in favor of Democrats, who put earmarks in a defense bill and then in return got hundreds of thousands of dollars from the defense contractors in that bill.
Ouch.
Led by...
That sounds like Blagojevich's kind
yeah,
of stuff.
Exactly. Led by John Murtha, the Democratic hawk and third in the leadership in the House.
Wow.
Yeah, that broke... I checked Political Wire before I went to bed last night, and it said, big, giant scandal coming, and then
that
today
is
CQ
huge.
Politics broke it up. Yeah. And the problem I have is that there's only a certain point where Obama's Teflon until his Teflon wears off.
Right.
Because all of the bad guys right now are Democrats. Blagojevich, Burris, to a certain extent Pelosi in that fucking retarded bill that she put together
right.
as a stimulus bill. And now this.
Yeah. Not good.
Yeah.
That's massive.
It's bad. Right now, it's only on, like, the inside. I'm waiting to see it on, like, MSNBC, MSN.
It'll happen, and, you know, Fox is going to make hay with this thing.
I know.
You'll hear all about it.
The Republicans are starting a website that is, track the wasteful spending in the...
Oh, they should have done that for the last 8 years. This is the thing that annoys me about that position. Okay, let's go back and talk about the banking bailout. Where was the oversight there? We're having to backtrack now to insert those things.
Oh, sure.
I mean, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
These people are talking out of both sides of their mouths. You know,
because they're the best minority party in the history of the planet.
The best.
It's as if their majority days don't exist.
Don't exist. Oh, my God. No, it's mind-boggling that a mere, what's it, a month ago?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a month, because I keep forgetting we're talking about a 3-week-old presidency.
Yes, that's true.
As if it's, you know, the paint hasn't even dried yet, for God's sake, you know. But this lack of attention to detail was a hallmark of these things.
Right.
And now they're suddenly scrutinizing everything. It's fascinating to me.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And why is it that, you know, when you're talking about bailing out ordinary people, that's something criminal, but bailing out huge institutions is not?
Right. Well,
people for whom, you know, a few thousand dollars makes a difference in the
sure.
the quality of their lives, the quality of their children's lives. But and here we are, and then at the same time, we're talking about... Oh, $780 million for UBS or $8 billion for Stanford in Texas or
right.
whatever, untold billions for Madoff. I mean, the scale, the proportion, the lack of connection to what the average American's life is like is really extraordinary.
It's the problem. You know, we had this at one of my jobs. They had developed this system, a proprietary system for scheduling work. You know, that's how you live and breathe in the post-production business.
Right.
You track an element, comes in, you barcode it, and you know where it is in the building. And they had done this great job of hot-rodding basically FileMaker Pro to be this super database that we all could book jobs. And, you know, you'd put it in and someone would know, oh, I've got this job to run. And it just was I liked it. People hate it. But overall, I thought it was one of the best things I've ever seen. And they did such a great job of integrating the whole entire company that when it crashed, you had 200 people with nothing to do.
Yipes.
I mean, you couldn't answer your email because you couldn't look up a damn thing. It's out. I mean, it was like rainy day at camp. There's nothing to do.
Amazing.
And the bosses knew it. Like, you'd have a 15-minute conversation with your boss about something you saw on television the night before because the damn systems crashed. And they managed to do that with our financial system to the tune of trillions of dollars. Like, the upside was when it worked, it was great.
When it was, yeah.
But the downside is, for fuck's sake, man. Did you? I know you didn't see it. I was going to text you. I'm pretty sure you wouldn't have seen it. It was an hour-long show on Tuesday night, the Frontline documentary on the meltdown.
No, I did not see that.
Oh, my God. It is everything you knew. There is no new news in it. It's just cool to hear.
Just sing it all together.
The room, the black and white photos in Pelosi's office with all the guys around the table. You see the limos pulling into the Capitol. It could have been stock footage for all I cared, but like as far as I was concerned, Bernanke was in one of those, and Paulson was in the other. And it really, as far as this documentary came down on, it really was Lehman Brothers. They decided that Lehman had to do its own thing. They weren't going to bail it out. They weren't going to back a purchase of Lehman Brothers.
Right.
Which is what? On the outside, maybe $100 billion, probably like $60. It took 30 to back Bear Stearns. It took 80 to do AIG. It took like 400 to do Fannie and Freddie. But they have like $4 trillion worth of mortgages. So, you know, it's not that bad.
Right.
And, you know, the heat was coming on from the right. And I was one of those people. I was writing my, you know, college roommate saying, fuck all you capitalists. You know what I mean? And fuck it, let it just crash. And he said, you don't want to see it crash. You don't want to see any of this crash. And
no, we don't. I mean, that's the problem. I mean, we know that we have to have these systems. We know that, and we know that they're essential to the well-being of the country. I mean, my point about the difference is that I don't see why bailing out an average person is being looked at askance by the right. That's what I'm. That's my point.
Their main thing is personal responsibility.
Yeah, well,
and these people
we can apply that everywhere.
Yeah. Well, you know, I sent another letter.
Well, I believe in personal responsibility. And when I say bailout, I mean assistance in the short term. I mean, look at this. Our schools are crap. Our infrastructure is crumbling.
Right.
You know, there are things that happen here. The level of ignorance in this country is extraordinary. We are approaching third world levels.
Oh, you know, of actual education.
Yeah, it's incredible to me.
It's true.
I don't get it. And how many of us maintain this sort of arrogant stance in the face of these realities is extraordinary.
That's the part I get when I speak to someone who says, you know, these people should never have taken the loan. And I was like, I don't have the
MBA.
That
cuts two ways.
Yeah.
That cuts two ways. Because here's the problem with that thinking. Absolutely, people should be aware, and you're right. They should not sign anything they don't understand, and you should ask questions until you get it. But we all know that what was really happening is that unsophisticated people were being bamboozled into buying things, and everybody knew they didn't have to explain anything to them.
Yes.
If they got them to sign it, it would work, and they could walk away. That's what was going on. So it cuts two ways. The person who's doing that is also equally at fault.
Yes.
And let's be honest, we know good and well that that wasn't unconscious.
No. No.
It was a way to make money.
One of the best explanations of the meltdown prior to the one that is more about the systemic problem was on This American Life. I have the podcast if you ever want to hear it. And they basically said, you know, there are wealthy people around the world who look for a safe place to put their money.
Right.
They'll take 2 to 5%, 6%. My dad used to tell me this. If I can get 6 or 7% in a government bond, I'll take it over a 10% gain in the market.
Right.
Lock it in. And, you know, around the world, our country and elsewhere, the one thing that had a very steady and secure trajectory of growth was the American real estate market.
Yes.
It, on average, it had some peaks. And if you look at the nation, there, like the high population centers have these big ups and these big lows, but then they always still come up. You know, the crash in the early 90s in Long Island meant you could get a house for $175,000 versus the crash in the early 70s when you get a house for $60,000. I mean, you know, it's still keep going up. Yeah, exactly. So the market, just the world was like, look, you know, the interest rates are low because of varying, you know, the U.S. needed to grow, so it had near zero interest rate. The greatest place to put my money is in a mortgage-backed security.
Right.
So there's this huge demand for something that was historically a really good investment. Some risk, but overall...
Makes sense.
And all these guys... And it's, they just said, I can keep selling mortgage-backed securities till I die. Like, I can't sell enough.
Right.
So they were telling brokers, go find me more mortgages.
No, it was definitely being driven, and then people became unscrupulous. It's clear.
Then they did shit like the NINA loan. No stated income, no stated assets.
Yeah.
They had
it. Well, you know, it's interesting. I know a girl who is in a situation like the one we're talking about. She's probably going to lose the house that she bought. And I asked her, I said, did you not understand what could happen? And she said, the broker that sold me the house said, don't worry about it, because by the time these things go up, you will probably have sold this property.
Right.
And realized your profit. So she asked the question, and this was the right response. She trusted him, and she thought, great, I'll sell this house in a couple of years before things change.
2 years was the tax
and
thing.
Yeah. Bada bing.
There was eventually no 2 years.
There was no 2 years, and she's stuck with the place. It's lost its value, but she's paying thousands of dollars a month for this place.
Well, under the new plan announced this week, if she is relatively credit worthy and her income could match the devalue, the mortgage on the devalue, she can get a refi.
She can get a refi, yeah. You know, which annoys me in a way. I was hoping that things would correct in a more severe way, but I don't want to see all these people
homeless. Let me tell you something. I'm with you on that, except for my I always have this saying where I liked when my boss's interests were aligned with mine.
Right.
Right now, my real estate interests are completely and diametrically opposed to me having a job. They are. The more that price lowers, the less of a chance I'm going to have a job.
Yeah.
That's just it. Unless there's a lagging effect where all of a sudden, you know, the economy stabilizes, we didn't lose jobs this month, and prices are still dropping on real estate,
right,
then I could go with it. But those two seem to be linked to each other, so I'll take what I'm seeing now. Like, if you can get me to September in the same job without a pay cut, I will be more than happy to take these prices, which I still think need to correct some more.
They do need to correct. But I think that with all this, I mean, you know, people needing to refi, it'll have an impact.
My feeling is that right now they're throwing stones at like a giant tidal wave.
And it's so hard to find loans anyway. I mean, it's not like people are they can't snap up property anymore.
No, they can't. No, unless you're cash rich, you can't.
Yeah.
My feeling is that as long as you can come up with the down payment, which is a tricky thing to do no matter what, but as long as you can and you have a relatively decent income, and like my model is either two on a lot or some sort of rental earning, the bank will go, all right, this is a decent gamble.
Right.
But, you know, who knows? I mean, I could find out that I'm just not going to get a loan anyway. I mean, right now, I put the whole idea of getting a house off till next year at this time.
Yeah.
Praying that I don't miss the opportune moment to buy. But I'm like, screw it.
Well, you
it's
know,
it's not going to be September like I thought it was.
Yeah, well, you know, who knows? You don't know.
I would like to talk about one thing that's been missing, and it's a creeper. And it's the only time I've seen the press, including, well, I actually started with USA Today, Newsweek 2 weeks ago in USA Today. Obama and Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Without fanfare, 17,000 more troops.
17,000 more troops are there. Well, it was brought up today in Canada. The Canadians made it clear that they have no interest in going forward. We talked about that. Mm. Afghanistan's interesting because it's pushing us into bed with Russia. And Russia is not doing things for us for free. So it's having a very interesting impact on that relationship. They're making it clear that we'll have to go through Russia or Russian or former Russian satellites to get into Afghanistan.
Right.
And I'm not quite sure what the demands are going to be from Russia, but we know they're going to be
interesting. It's going to be turn a blind eye when they try and get back some of those Baltic states that they're pissed they're gone.
One of the things they've already made clear is they want
Georgia,
and what's the other state? They don't want Georgia or the other.
To go into NATO.
To go into NATO, yeah.
This is the part I love about post-Cold War.
Europe doesn't really want them either.
But this is the part I love about the post-Cold War. If there was one thing that's useless after the fucking Berlin Wall comes down, it's NATO.
Right.
Right? Fucking Soviet Union's no longer there. The point of growing NATO is zero, except for to irritate the bear.
Right.
Let's make the bear pissed off some more.
Right.
And they got a strong man in there. the Putin, who's still apparently running the damn country.
Seems
and he was
like,
oh, you know what? Our shit may be old, but it still fucks shit up.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the part that's dumbfounding.
And we might not be the Soviet Union, but we are still Russia, baby.
Yeah.
And our position, you know, and obviously it's in their interest as well to have us succeed in Afghanistan, because Afghanistan is on their southern flank, and problems there can, and we people forget that Russia is in the southern hemisphere of its country is largely Islamic, so that trouble can go right into Russia,
right.
And they don't want it.
Right.
So it's a complicated
Plus
arena.
Democrats and Bush 41 style diplomacy is I'll split up the riches with you.
Yeah.
If there were James A. Baker III were still the Secretary of State, he'd be like, look, you know what? Is this about oil? We can make a deal on oil.
Right.
You know, is this about a pipeline? What do you need? We can pay this off.
The only good news about Afghanistan is that they may have learned something from the Charlie Wilson's War, which, you know, we know, brought down the Soviet Union.
Right.
There is talk of helping to build infrastructure, helping to educate, helping to create an economy, which is not something that we did, have ever really done heretofore. I don't know how successful it's going to be, but at least the thinking is a little bit different. It's a little less short-term,
right.
And it's a little less leaving people twisting in the wind, which frankly is coming home to bite us in the you-know-what right now.
Right. To me, the notion of growing a middle class around the world is the single greatest. It answers almost every problem. Now, you can't just, like, democratize Iran and have free and fair elections, or Egypt, for that matter, until you get that middle class.
Right.
So if you can get them to get to a middle class, then you can start having free and fair elections. Because once people have something that they like, they have this house, like the studio.
They don't want to lose it.
They don't want to lose it.
They don't want to lose it.
And it changes things. The problem is that the radicals in those cultures hate westernization, and that comes that comes with that. But you know, you can deal with that.
I don't know. It's an interesting thing, because you bring in a consumer class as well,
right?
Which is always in our best interest.
The only downside of all that is that the environment suffers in a middle class, a worldwide middle class with a consumerism attitude.
Right.
You wind up with
garbage, waste, toxins.
Yeah, a disposable society. Which, getting back to the $6.99 polo shirt, which I will be getting this spring.
Why not? Just wash it in cold water. Told you to do that.
All right.
Afghanistan's it's an interesting place. That could be the Achilles heel of this presidency.
To me, it reminds me a little bit of both JFK and LBJ. JFK sent the advisors, the quote unquote military advisors, into Vietnam.
Right.
With a policy which said I saw it. Anyone who's listened to the show for a long time knows this documentary. It's the televised history of Vietnam. It's an 11-hour documentary and it's on DVD now. It's like, of course, on two DVDs. But it has all this footage that before they realized they should censor a war.
Right.
Vietnam had all this access to battles and generals, and there's JFK explaining that the guy who wins the battle for the hearts and minds wins the war in Vietnam, and should the South not be able to protect themselves, then we would have to withdraw. Now, those could have been timed for that particular moment in time, but they were the themes of how we lost that whole entire thing. And so right now, Obama with 17,000 troops reminds me of JFK in the early 60s putting advisors into South Vietnam after the French had just gotten their asses beat out of there with, I think, billions of dollars in 1950s money that we sent over to aid the French. I think I'm pretty sure it was billions in the billions in the 50s, which is what I can't even imagine how large that is now. But then it also smacked of, LBJ decides to send brigades.
Right.
LBJ is like, all right, we're going to put a big footprint in there and fuck things up. That, to me, is the sleeper negative for Barack Obama.
That one worries me a lot.
And the question is, does Petraeus's plan... You got two sides that have learned from Iraq. You got the insurgents that know what worked in Iraq, and you got Petraeus who knows. Well, basically, I'll begrudgingly give them...
Well, he wanted 30.
Yeah.
He got 17. We'll see.
Obama's got to do a tightrope with the far left.
Yeah.
He has to. I would love to speak to a full believer from the left about what they feel about with Obama now.
It's going to be interesting. But I mean, I think he's been consistent. I mean, he's never pretended to be that far to the left. I think many people sort of projected those things
yes,
onto him.
Did.
But he's never really presented himself to be that kind of a person.
The best analysis I read was on one of the Political Wire things this week, one of the blurbs where they said, everyone forgets that every Afghanistan, he said this in the campaign, but every Afghanistan answer was came out of his I'd get out of Iraq answer.
Right.
So if you just wanted us out of Iraq, you didn't hear the other half of the sentence.
Didn't listen, and he's doing exactly what
and
he said he was going to do.
He's doing what he's going to do. He's getting us out of one, but he's going full bore in the other, which is kind of the one that I think we need to fight, but I'm not so sure anymore, and I don't know if a battle to the death or attrition is worth it.
And we must remember that we're borrowing money to finance both of these situations, so that's got to be looked at as well.
Right. And the battle, the problem I have is that once we became a permanently militarized country, the slight benefit to militarizing is gone.
Yes.
It's actually a drag now to destroy the shit we've made.
It's a drag, and it's also expensive, and I don't think there are the benefits that there once were perceived to be. That World War II did stimulate the culture, but that's that and that drive never left us in a way.
Right. But we were a nation that barely made munitions
between
the two great wars.
Between the two great wars. Because we've essentially gone back into isolationism at that point.
It was when Dwight Eisenhower's great, that big speech was true. He's like, this shit's going on now forever.
Right.
Beware the military-industrial... I mean, this guy was a moderate Republican that was an architect of war.
Beware the military-industrial complex, and was he ever right?
Right? But the problem is the benefit of turning that spigot on... Reagan was the last guy to turn it on. Mm. That's it. It hasn't really... There was a peace dividend under Clinton, but they were still really relatively large percentage of GDP defense budgets.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, when I actually talk about the go back to Hillary's candidacy, I remember watching MSNBC or CNBC, and they said, they had these analysts on, they're like, well, if Hillary is going to win, which we think she will, you won't see a dime cut from the $600 billion defense budget. Hillary's going to be big on defense.
She's going to be a hawk. Yeah.
Now, the biggest the defense budget got under Bush was 400 and something, 480, not including the wars, which put it way over.
Right.
But they're talking about a $600 billion defense budget under Hillary because she's going to be a hawk. Like, I mean, there's no benefit.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And then there's no benefit. And the men who are men and women who are serving are being abused because they're barely paid properly. Their families are not covered and cared for in a way that befits the sacrifice they're making. That's got to change.
My feeling is there's going to be a point when Barack Obama has this speech from the Oval Office behind the desk where he asks us to choose. Because if you fully fund Veterans Administration, the wounds that have come out of the Iraq War... There may be only 3,000 or 4,000 dead, but the number of actual wounded people that are heavily expensive, big expensive rehab, the VA budget is going to just exponentially explode. And the Afghanistan war is going to be gigantic.
Yeah.
And if you have to come back to Iraq for any reason, even if it's just to drop bombs from 40,000 feet, I mean, he would have to say, we have all that. And then we have healthcare, and then we have this housing thing, and then let's not forget that the banking system is just corrupt.
Yeah, and that was the other thing. I mean, what do you think of all this talk of nationalizing banks?
They have to. Greenspan said that they were going to have to, and as much as that guy is part to blame, I've always felt his instincts were correct. The example we have, and I love the Japanese for coming up with this term, are the zombie banks of the 90s in Japan.
Right.
And what we have right now are capitalized. It's one of the brilliant things. I totally recommend everyone to go watch the February 17th The Meltdown documentary on the Frontline website. You can see it on your computer, and there's extended clips if you want. But basically, Paulson did not want to inject cash into the banks. He was forced to. The government, like the whole situation, forced him to do it. And all these banks are doing is being capitalized.
Well, that's what we're seeing. They're being capitalized. They're not giving loans.
They're not loaning. And they can't get rid of their toxic assets.
So they are zombies. They're just sitting there.
By the way, who's going to buy a 30-year junk bond? I'm just curious. Which one of us is going to say, you know what? Let's see. In 2006, a house in Silver Lake was $800,000. In 2009, it's down to, I don't know, $400,000 or $500,000, maybe $600,000 if it's in turnkey condition. Maybe in 2010, that thing drops to $350,000. I'm going to buy that loan. I'm going to buy that foreclosed asset and hope that it somehow gets back up to $900,000. I'm going to make a profit at $900,000. Like, what do you?
It's not going to happen.
What person's buying that junk bond?
It's not going to happen.
Which means it's dust. Which means that there's no. I mean, whatever. Fuck it. You know, I never thought I would see something like this in all of my life.
Well, be careful. Things could easily be worse than this.
That's true.
Yeah.
There's also the psychology.
Right now we're just uncomfortable, but it could be crazy.
Well, it got worse.
Yeah.
The news started tightening around my neck this week. I don't care what anyone says. If I don't get laid off tomorrow, I'm going into work tomorrow with donuts thinking it's my last day.
Right.
Like, everybody, here's some fat, sugary, buttery donuts for all y'all, because I may not be back on Monday.
I love all
you guys. You're great. I mean, it's true. And it keeps getting tighter and tighter, and you just don't know where it's going to end. Okay, so let's do... We're actually pretty much at the limit. Let's do... I want to do Reagan and Carter. Reagan versus Carter. Which is... anyone's listening is...
You love that.
I love it.
I think we're going to see a whole other paradigm.
It's going to be Reagan... Was he Reagan, Carter, or Obama? Because he's
going to emerge as Obama. And I think... As I keep bringing up, there's a little bit of Clinton there, too.
I think the best part is
he knows how to move things forward with his public appearances. He knows how to take things to the people, and that works.
Yeah,
it really does.
The problem is the policy.
Yeah, well.
But then everyone asks, "Is there a policy for?"
Is there a policy for a situation like this? That's the big problem. What's the magic answer? Nobody knows. It's easy to criticize something that's put forward, no matter what the origins were. We can put that part aside, because I do have issues with the way things were put forward, and I definitely think it was a major mistake. But I'm not hearing any other concrete solutions that
Let me ask you a question. Let's say this: the stimulus bill was this. We are going to fund local governments first, state governments second, on projects that they are cutting, that they're just stopping now. And we all know that there are teachers being laid off on a daily basis and projects that are just being stopped.
Right.
The first thing we're going to do, so there's not any major Hoover Dam projects that are shovel ready, but... We've talked to local governments and state governments, and we've found $600 billion worth of that in all over the country. Guys with gun racks in the South, et cetera, are all going to go back to work for a little while, right? Then we're going to give you guys an average of $50 a week, not $8 a week, 50 bucks a week in your paycheck. That's going to come out of the whatever. The withholding tables. They're going to all change. You won't have to pay at the end of the year. We're going to give you 50 bucks a week on average, up to 75,000, and after that it trails off. And we're looking for more shovel ready. And that's going to be about $1 trillion worth of investment in this country. Mm. And then we're going to figure out what to do with the banks. We're not necessarily so sure about what to do with the banks, but we're going to have some sort of updates on... First thing we're doing is, one thing I do think that they're doing that's really smart is they're doing the stress test on the banks as they are with the mortgage loans. Geithner said, I'm not going to, by the way, I found out that Geithner, I might have said it on the show last week, but I don't think I knew at that point. Geithner had to pull the plan he was going to announce. That's why he had a non-statement.
Ah.
The plan he was going to announce was too astronomically large that they said, you can't do that. You have to go to plan B. Well, we don't really have the details on plan B, but you already have the press conference scheduled.
Well, smile.
So just go out there and throw out the broad strokes. But then they say, you know, we're going to go into the banks, and the ones that are relatively salvageable, we'll salvage. If there are assets we can buy off of them that are salvageable, we'll salvage. And then there's going to be a lot of people worldwide who just saw their investment turn to dust. That, to me, would work. I think the country would be 80% behind it. I think conservatives would be behind it.
Yeah, it's inevitable. I think it's inevitable. It's going to kind of force itself to go that way anyway. We can't save this thing. We can't soak up all this toxicity. We can't.
No. And the other part that's unrealistic is they don't want foreclosures, and they don't want the market because they devalue the rate in the market. But at its peak, statistically, in Los Angeles County, which is a very big county, like forget where we live is much more distorted than this particular statistic. At the real estate peak, 48% of the people in Los Angeles County could not afford the average price of a home.
Which is
the definition of non-sustainability.
Outrageous. Yeah.
So, what are you trying to save? You can't get us back to that because 48% of us can't afford that.
Right.
And the people who were buying in couldn't. You have to let that crash. You just got to keep us. I wouldn't like if someone told me, look, you might lose your job tomorrow, but they're seriously a guy like you could go to the county and, you know, schedule crews for doing potholes. They got potholes for days.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be like, all right, you know, screw it. I'll have to learn some shit about lead times. And
yeah,
stuff,
you'd be
all
right.
I can do it. It's a wage. All right, cool. Yeah. I can do it. But that's not there right now.
Nope.
Anyway, all right. So you don't want to do Reagan or Carter?
Well, yeah.
This week he was Obama.
We can.
This week he was
we
Obama.
Can. I'm thinking, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's not that I don't want to do it. I just, my thing is that I'm still waiting for the paint to dry. It's 3 weeks in. I want to see who he is.
Let's give him credit for that. Three weeks into his presidency, like it or not, he's done big things.
He's done big things.
Arguably bigger things than Reagan accomplished in his first 100 days thus far, in his first 30 days.
This is 23 days. 23? Is it 23 or 24?
It's 24 because next week it becomes a full month, right?
Right.
No. This week was a full month because it was the 19th. He came out on the 20th. So we're like...
Yeah, 3 weeks-ish.
I'll give him credit. He's done more faster than I could imagine. But on the other side, the expectation level is so high.
I think that's the big thing for me, and that's why I kind of am resisting the templates that you're putting forward, because I think that, you know, he's put into such an extraordinary situation. He's inherited the biggest mess that we've ever lived through, and someone's going to emerge from reacting to all that he's going to be created by the circumstances in a way, is what I'm trying to say. And so I'm not ready to box him in yet because I'm still watching.
This week he was neither. He was neither Reagan or Carter.
He's obviously he's learning very quickly because, you know, this battle, this madness has all been at such an accelerated pace. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It really is crazy.
I would say that the one thing that you remind me of that he is he's Clintonian to a certain extent.
Yes.
Except for he's not incremental, but he's shrewd.
Shrewd and plays the game and knows how to work with the people and also knows how to take it to the streets the way Bill did. And when Bill was at his best, you know, because, I mean, he was a brilliant man when he was at his best. I do not take that from him.
God, I wish someone...
I like the bitter Bill, the after Bill.
People say it's the heart operation.
That could be
it. People say that after, if you look at people who've had that type of operation, they're, for whatever reason, they're like sort of acidic afterwards.
Interesting.
He doesn't have the touch he had.
No, he was brilliant. He was amazing. I mean, to do what he did and with the kind of constant dogging of the Republicans from day one that he lived through. I mean, these people hamstrung his regime like nobody's business. And the one thing that really annoys me the most about that party is that when the U.S. embassies were being bombed and all sorts of things that were going on that were leading up to 9/11, I really feel like a lot of energy was siphoned off into these ridiculous impeachment processes, which were a political game that did nothing to really benefit the country. Because people keep forgetting inside of that beltway what their real job is, which is to take care of the rest of us. Well, that's why we put you there. You belong to us. It's not the other way around.
Right.
And I resent that.
I wish
tremendously.
I've tried to find the footage of people claiming it was Wag the Dog. And there was a guy, Wen-Ho Lee, who was the supposed spy in the New Mexico laboratory, which turns out it was false or whatever reason.
Wag the dog in what set of circumstances are we talking about?
When Bill Clinton sent missiles into Afghanistan. The Republicans said it's Wag the Dog.
Oh, I see. I see what you're
saying. And there's footage of them saying that. And then when Ho Lee was accused of stealing state secrets, which he eventually was exonerated for somehow, there were Republicans that said, Bill Clinton's so obsessed with this international terrorism boogeyman that he's not minding the store at home.
Right.
And I try my hardest, I look up quotes, I do everything I can to try and find what these guys have said, and I cannot find it.
We'll find it.
The day I find that stuff, because that's really where the Republican Party was at. That was where the hubris of ignoring the outgoing Clinton administration's please, you know, to look at this.
The USS Cole, I mean, come on. It, all of these, and we knew who was behind it.
Yes.
People knew who Osama bin Laden was then. They knew. But, you know, those days have come and gone. What can we do?
Right.
Here we are now.
I know.
You know.
Well, then I'll say this much. I think Obama ended the week on an upside. The one thing I'm finding is that some of the policies he's presenting in a very anecdotal way, in terms of especially when it comes to the touchy subject, it's like abortion, God, and mortgages.
Right.
Like, don't talk to me about mortgages. People aren't happy with a bailout for this or a lifeline for that, or what is this stimulus really going to be? But they're happy with him. There's still that, like, I like Obama better than the last guy. But, you know, I have my mortgage and I pay on time. Why don't I get refi? You know, like, I hear all that. Like, he's not struck that policy tone.
Right.
Maybe because all the policy has just got a bitter pill in every single...
But, I mean, look at the situation. Again, how are you going to please people who are still solvent when so many are insolvent? And that's what you have to address.
Right.
You know, and yes, I mean, I kind of feel the same way. Like, let the prices go down so I can get a house.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but, you know, the reality is that, you know, when you consider what that really means, that a family might become homeless or, you know, unable to function because they don't have a roof over their head, it's a little more serious than that.
Yeah.
And we're talking about millions of people who might be in the same circumstances.
Oh, yeah.
They have to be addressed first.
Yeah.
I mean, and we see what happens when we don't address the needy. Let's look at Katrina.
I did a little bit of research. For as far as I can tell, it's very hard to actually get numbers that are exact, but there are about 75 million homes in the United States, of which about 48 million have mortgages, which is the range of estimates like $11 trillion to $14 trillion worth of mortgages in this country. But the subprime is $2 to $2.5 trillion. Huge number. But when you look at how gigantic this whole entire thing is. By the way, we didn't talk about the chimpanzee.
Oh, we didn't talk about the chimpanzee. Are you referring to the unfortunate New York Post cartoon? Well, you know, they finally apologized.
They did, but...
But only half-heartedly, because they felt that the cartoon was being used by people who've always been against them, and they didn't mean any harm in, you know... I'm assuming comparing the president to a monkey with two bullet holes in its chest.
Yeah.
It's a bit much. It's a bit much. And I mean, and let's not bullshit ourselves. I mean, you know, the Hillary Clinton invoked the assassination of this man. Everybody's mentioned it.
Yeah,
it's a little too much. And it seems like it's very convenient. It's very easy for people to ignore the history of blacks in this country, and particularly the cavalier way in which they have been killed for centuries by the authorities. And no, that one did not go down too well. But the Post got their asses handed to them.
It was, I think that the whole point was to see if they could engage the White House in a racial controversy.
They won't. He won't allow himself.
He wouldn't do it.
He won't allow himself to stoop to that level. But you know what? He'd galvanized a lot of other people and they got scared.
Yeah.
And they should. It's the same way that Facebook got corrected very quickly when they changed their terms and suddenly said they owned our content. And people were like, no, you don't. And mysteriously, they reverted to their other policy until they could clarify the things that were concerning people. Like, guys, you don't own things. You don't own this.
You own my image.
You don't know what the hell of a firestorm you're going to bring on yourself if you do try to own things like that. If I own the copyright of something, or if I sell my work,
right,
and I post it on Facebook, you own it now? That doesn't work.
Yeah. Even sense. After you close your account down. That was my favorite part.
I love that. I mean, you know, great. The messages, I don't give a damn, you know, but you don't know my pictures.
No.
Your
likeness.
My
You become famous, and they're going to be like, Steve Adams.
I own this photo.
Steve
but
Adams
guess what? The
did
photographer
Facebook.
Actually owns it.
That's true.
So you're going to have a problem there.
Although, talk to Shepard Fairey.
Yeah, well, Shepard Fairey technically was like Warhol. He did a rendition of an existing piece.
Right.
Therefore, it becomes a new piece of art.
Yeah.
It's just based on your photograph.
If I were the photographer,
Manny Garcia is his name, actually. But, oddly, I don't know why I know the photographer's name. It's Manny Garcia.
Wow.
It's stuck in my
mind. Who's a freelance, right? Wasn't really like a full AP.
Yeah, he's a freelance photographer, and he feels...
That, to me, was the turning point in the election. The first day I saw the Hope poster stuck up on a building, I went, oh. And here I am, an ardent Hillary supporter, and I look up, and there... is this fucking Obama poster. I'm like, fuck, can I get one of those for my house?
You're like my mother. My mother's still bitter about Hillary.
I'm not bitter about Hillary.
No, I'm not saying you are. I'm saying my mother is. It's amazing. I'm like, Mom, it's over.
Yeah.
But Hillary should have, like, it's over.
Well, you know, this is, and honestly, I think the Democratic Party chose wisely. There were two ways to go. The problem with having the first African-American and the first woman running in the same party was that you were going to piss off one giant constituency
or the other.
And I hate to say it, but I think black people would have finally bolted the Democratic Party, because the Democratic Party has just taken black people for granted.
For way too long. The problem, of course, is that the Republicans don't offer anything.
That's true.
And when they do manage to put black figureheads in, they're always so incredibly...
Oh, my God.
You know, I mean, I don't have words for it right now, but these people are always very disturbing and not terribly representative.
Well, like when they ran Alan Keyes, they threw Alan Keyes in the race against Obama.
Yeah. It's like,
when
guys.
He's black.
Yeah, it's like, guys, it's a little more complicated than that. And that's the whole problem. It doesn't just begin and end with the pigment. There's got to be some character and some, you know. But this is their problem. Yeah, this is their problem. So, you know, that's the only thing about that. I think that's the only thing that keeps black voters in.
Well, the problem is if they sit on their hands. So the big problem for George Bush the first was conservatives sat on their hands, and the only thing that's motivated conservatives since then is the fact that they didn't get up and vote for him holding their nose, and they got Clinton, who they really hated.
Right.
And they felt was illegitimate because he won in a three-way race. And if African-Americans or black people don't go out and vote, Democrats are fucked. If black people or women don't vote, the Democrats are fucked.
Right.
Straight up.
Right.
End of story. But I think that the constituency that was willing to accept the shot on the chin would be the female constituency that's still pretty inspired by this guy. He's still a really charismatic fellow. Whereas Hillary, if Bill didn't do his routine, Hillary could have been that candidate. But once he decided that the smart money was on turning Barack Obama into the black candidate.
Right.
Everything went down.
Which was such a fascinating transformation, because he was...
The first black president.
First,
he wasn't.
No. I mean, he wasn't, but that's I moved beyond that. I meant his, Barack's media image. First, it was that, you know, it was very much in the minds of journalists that he was half black and half white. Mm-hmm. And then it was, is he black enough?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Bill made him really, really black, and so did his dear friend, the Reverend from Chicago.
Yes.
Made him super black.
Yeah.
and then he had to sort of dial it back to the middle.
Right.
Which is where he, you know, and the funny thing is that I don't think the man is even really that concerned about race in the first place.
No.
It's more of a tricky traditional American obsession. That
I don't even see, you know, like, I know it's a very historic moment, and if he serves one term or not, it's still a huge point for the nation, and I don't even see the significance of that. I see a guy who's a fucking smart guy.
He's a smart guy.
And I want to see him succeed, because there's too much...
Well, I mean, the racial thing is more of a step forward for white Americans than it is for black people, because they're the ones who had to open their minds to this. So, I mean, whatever. Now we can forget about it and just get on with running the damn
country.
Well,
yeah, I mean, I don't think... I mean, I'm sure there's some backward-ass people who noticed his race before anything else, his color of his skin, but for me personally...
Sure, and they continue to do. I see it all over the web, but it's like, guys, at some point we have to let this go and move on to the things that really matter, which is the governing of still the most significant nation in the world.
Yeah, how about that,
by
the way?
Let's kind of cut the crap and focus on the things that really matter. Because, you know, as we're saying, everybody's depending on us to succeed and to function because our survival and our well-being means all of their well-being.
Exactly.
And, you know, no matter whether that sounds arrogant or not, it's just the truth.
Well, this fucking, you know? This financial crisis has proven it.
It's but proven it.
We've gone over, which is totally cool, but we'll actually
run out of time
on our disc. I know. I need to, let's see. She said you do, I got to get my directions. I'm flying solo without Katrina's room.